Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome back to another episode of Textory. If you don't know what Textory is, what are you even doing here? I mean, I'm joking. Textory is a podcast about history. We read historical texts, we dissect them, we laugh at them. We always find something modern in them. Yeah, that's what the podcast is about. So let's jump into it. Today, we are coming back to a person that if you were cool enough to listen to previous episodes, I don't remember how many episodes back, but we did talk about Lola Montez. Now, I'm gonna do like a quick reminder of who she is so you don't feel lost. But before that, just a quick reminder that I have a Patreon. Patreon.com/textory is where you'll find me and you can support this podcast and make sure more episodes are coming out. So do check that out. Now back to the episode. Lola Montez, as they said, a quick recap. Lola Montez was a Victorian courtesan, a Victorian dancer, and just all around a bad bitch. Her name was actually Eliza Rosanna Gilbert. She had nothing to do with Spain. She pretended to be Spanish. She was actually Irish. And because it was the Victorian era, there was no way of checking that. So people simply did not care. Now, the last time we spoke about her, we read her book, The Arts of Beauty, which was published in 1858. And when I was reading the book, I noticed that it's actually 2 books in one. So the first one, The Arts of Beauty, which we focused on the last time I was talking about her, is actually a bunch of beauty tips and just straight up like a beauty guide. But the second part, I just assumed it's like the same thing because it just seemed like a guide. So the other book is called The Art of Fascinating. And I was thinking, okay, this sounds interesting because her being a courtesan and obviously being like well-versed in relationships and in anything men-related, she had a lot of experience. So I would gladly read her notes on flirting, on being desirable, etc. So this one is actually directed towards men. And for the first couple of paragraphs, I was like 100% sure she's for real. And it wasn't until later that I was like, wait, no, she's making fun of them. She is 100% taking the piss. And I'm also like quite sure that this book was actually read by women who were like laughing at men. But anyway, let's jump into it. There is not much introduction I can do, but let's just get into it. I expect to win the gratitude of the whole masculine gender by these rules of the art of fascinating. It used to be supposed that this art belonged exclusively to my sex, but that was a vulgar error, which the sharp practice of the men has long since exploded. And it is now well established that gentlemen spend a great deal more in inventing ways and means to entrap women and get them in love with them than women do in trying to win the hearts of gentlemen. Lovemaking, indeed, seems to be the being's end and aim of a man. He appears to think that he was born for no other purpose, and he devotes himself to the business with a zeal and enthusiasm highly honorable to his exalted genius, and to the immortal station he claims for himself of being the lord of creation. To become a proficient in the art of fascinating, therefore, is not merely an accomplishment and a pastime, but it is a duty which he may not neglect without incurring the gravest censure of mankind. In entering upon the study of this great and important art, to start correctly, he must take it for granted that women are not only very poor judges of men, but that they absolutely prefer fops, fools, and triflers to men of sense and character. If, however, the student has doubts on this subject, he had better refer to certain learned authorities, which will not fail to establish his mind in the right premises. Mackenzie says, "Women have a predilection for frivolous men." One of the most learned of the British essayists says, "When we see a fellow loud and talkative, full of insipid life and laughter, we may venture to pronounce him a female favorite." Mr. Burke tells you that the character which generally passes for agreeable with the women is made up of civility and falsehood. So, at first I was like, okay, so it's a book for men that want to attract women, and she is treating it very seriously. But this all vanished when I read the actual rules. So the book consists of dozens of rules. I will not read all of them, even though they're all really funny. It's a lot. So I picked some of them. You will soon see what kind of rules these are. Rule the first. Set it down then that women prefer triflers to men of sense. And when you wish to make one of the sex tremendously in love with you, you will of course make yourself as big a fool as possible in order to ensure the most speedy and triumphant success. Your hope of complete success, then, lies in your ability to be a coxcomb who has no earthly recommendation but his face, his coat, and his impudence. To acquire pleasing and fascinating manners, you will do well to spend about half your time between the curling irons and the looking glass. She's poking fun at men that take too much care of their appearance instead of actually working on their character, which, not to call anyone out, but I think it's also, it reminds me of modern men who, after a breakup, they do not focus on like what went wrong in terms of the relationship, what they could have done better, what they could improve within their character, but they go to the gym, basically. Rule the second. You will make an immense hit with the ladies by pretending to be no admirer of any particular woman, but a professed adorer and slave of the whole sex. A thing which you can easily show by staring insultingly at every pretty woman you meet. This will also be following the analogy of nature, as we know that insects molest those who have the tenderest skins and fairest complexions. Then, as you are not a particular but only a general lover, the ladies will regard it as a safe business to receive the fractional part of your heart which might belong to them. Rule the third. You will do well to boast that you have no higher ambition in life than merely to render yourself agreeable to the ladies. This will at once impress them with profound respect for the magnitude of your ambition and the majesty of your genius. She's basically laughing at boys here. I feel like she's laughing at men that definitely existed in the era, and men whose sole interest was conquering women, attracting women, and just in general being admired. And I'm sure her being like the top level courtesan, she must have dealt with a great deal of those types of men. Rule the fifth, by all means, wear jewelry. If you have it not of your own, borrow it or get it some other way, for you must be sure that you go not into the presence of any woman whose good opinion is worth having without being loaded with jewelry. An immense breastpin, either of diamonds or paste, with two rings on each hand and a heavy fob chain, 12 inches long, will be sufficient to prove that you are a man of substantial good sense, and that you are the possessor of a heart which is worthy of the confidence and admiration of any woman. So, assuming these are all kind of like anti-rules, then she probably wasn't fond of men who wore jewelry, which is interesting because this is 1850s and no longer than like 60, 70 years prior, that was completely normal for men to be adorned with jewelry just as much as women. Maybe like minus the earrings, but in general, 18th century was very big in terms of men's outfits, men's fashion, and men's flamboyance. And fast forward to 1850s, she is actually mocking them. Rule the seventh. Let your compliments be of so marked a character that there can be no mistaking them. For instance, you may ask her if she is always particular to shut her eyes on retiring to bed. She will ask why, and you will answer, because if you do not, I fear that the brightness of your eyes will burn holes in the blanket or set the house on fire. Check out that Riz. Check out that Riz. This guy, he's 100% getting it. Rule the 8. You cannot be too attentive to your dress. You should never approach a lady except when dressed so as to look precisely as though a tailor had made you not more than 15 minutes before. Rule the 9th. On being introduced to a lady, you will immediately inform her that you consider that the proper study of mankind is woman, and that Pope was therefore wrong when he asserted it to be men. So basically, it's the Victorian equivalent of modern guys who actually do not care about women, but they're like, I read a feminist manifesto recently. Rule the 10th. If you are invited to dine, go at least an hour or an hour and a half before the time, for then the lady will be sure never to forget you, as the attentive and polite gentleman who allowed her neither time to dress nor to superintend her dinner. Rule the 12th. When you call upon a lady, be sure that you say something smart and make some local hit applicable to herself. For instance, if you perceive that she has a cough, you can say that you are sorry to hear that, as you fear it may lead to a coffin. What? Oh, a cough. Okay, this one got me. I mean, I love puns. This will actually work. Some such sublime joke as this will be sure to obtain you a favorable reception. I mean, I'm kind of into it, not gonna lie. Rule the 13th. If you invite a lady to go to the theater, neglect not to leave her and go out to drink with your male friends between each act, as this will show her that you have confidence that she can protect herself. And if you can fall asleep during the play, it will be a great thing for you, as it will show that you are too much interested in her to take any interest in the play. And besides, she has the sweet privilege of imagining that you're dreaming of her. Nothing so fascinates a woman as to know that a gentleman dreams about her. I feel like she just wrote down a list of red flags that she collected over time. Like, me and my friends once sat down and we started writing down red flags at a cafe. These were all things that we agreed on. So I think it's interesting that this sounds so much like it's that, but written by a Victorian woman. And I feel like Victorian women buying the book were like, oh my God, same girl. Rule the 14th. It will be greatly to your advantage to entertain the lady you would win with an account of the number of women who are in love with you and of the decided advances which they have made to you. For this will not only prove that you are a great favorite with the ladies and a man of true honor, but it will convince her that she may have the honor of being enrolled in the same list and of being praised in the same way in the presence of your other female friends. Again, this must have 100% happened. Like, a guy would list the ladies that are in love with him, and the lady would just be like, oh my God, can he not? Like, this is not attractive at all. Rule the 15th. One of the most direct and sure ways to fascinate a lady is to excite in her heart a spirit of rivalry through jealousy. A common way of doing this is to get the daguerreotypes of your father's cook and chambermaid and take them to your lady love and tell her that they are the likenesses of two very rich and highly respectable ladies who have for a long time persecuted you with their affections and at last have had the indelicacy to send you their pictures without any solicitation on your part whatever. Why is sending unsolicited pictures already a thing in 1858? It's so funny. Like, oh my God, she sent me a daguerreotype without permission. I did not ask for that. Rule the 17th. If you have not learning, by all means pretend to have it, for this will give a lady and all her friends an opportunity of laughing at you, which will make you a most agreeable and amusing fellow in her estimation. Rule the 18th. It will be a masterly stroke of policy for you to pretend to be an atheist and to scoff at every idea of religion. For if you have no respect for your maker, nor for anything that mankind holds sacred, it will satisfy any intelligent and reflecting lady that you will have all the more respect and love to bestow upon her. This is an interesting thought. Does atheist love harder? Because he has no love that is spent on his faith? Rule the 19th. You ought to know that there are four things which always possess more or less interest to a lady. A parrot, a peacock, a monkey, and a man. And the nearer you can come to uniting all these about equally in your own character, the more will you be loved. This is also a cheap and excellent recipe for making a dandy, a creature which is always an object of admiration and esteem to the ladies. I know she's being sarcastic, but I'm assuming there must have been ladies that were like very attracted to dandies. And I mean, obviously, Beau Brummel is a good example, but I think a lot of men think that looking good is like not attractive to women, which I don't understand. But in this case, she's the one saying it. So I'm assuming it must have been like a lot of Victorian ladies that were just prim and proper and were not enjoying men that looked too good. Rule the 20th. As heels are of more importance to men than heads, you will, of course, spend all your earlier days in learning to dance. And when you are perfected in the art, you cannot do better than spend the rest of your time in dancing. I don't understand why this one's supposed to be like irony, because they did genuinely care about their dancing. But maybe it's about men who dance well, but maybe were not too smart. Rule the 21st. Nothing so readily fascinates a lady as wit. But as this is a very rare thing, and only one in 10,000 really possesses it, the best you can do is affect it. That is, you can try to be witty, and even if you should fail, the lady's laughter will testify how much she is delighted at your effort. Rule the 22nd. Should you invite a lady out to supper, you must by all means order three times as much of expensive dishes as it will be possible for you to eat, as this will show her that you have a generous disregard of money, and would just as soon waste it as spend it economically, which will convince her that your wife will never want for money. That is, if you have any yourself. Rule the 23rd. Whenever you call on a lady, speak of having just come from the club and dwell with pride upon the amount of time you spent there, because all ladies have great faith in the happy influence of such places as clubs upon a young man. I know the meaning of the club here is different because it was like a gentleman's club, but they still drank in the club and they still smoked in the club and got crazy in the club. So it's pretty much like the Victorian equivalent of a guy saying that he likes to party a lot. Rule the 24th. You must do everything in your power to convince the lady that you are, in a modest way, a great admirer of beauty. An excellent way to prove which is to be always seen on rainy days when the streets are muddy, standing at the corners where most ladies pass, staring at the embarrassments of pedestrian beauty, picking its blushing way through the mud. This is a compliment to the ladies and a proof of your modest and elevated admiration of the beautiful, which every respectable woman will duly appreciate. Why does this remind me of those skits where women pretend that they love catcalling? You know, you have a man that catcalls them and then women do what they think men think that women should do when they catcall them. Do you know those videos? Like, obviously it's actors, but the women would be like, oh my god, did you just catcall me? That's so exciting. Thank you. Oh, I know I have a nice ass. I've always wanted to hear that. And like, what do they think is gonna happen? I feel like this is the Victorian version of that, where sure, if you stare at ladies, they're gonna feel so comfortable around you. Rule the 25th. Of course, you will never allow yourself to sit 5 minutes by the side of a lady without paying her some respectful and delicate attention, such as taking her handkerchief and spreading it out on your lap, or leaning affectionately upon her, or throwing your arm over the back of her chair, which will look to spectators as though it were around her neck. And you can also examine her hair and say she's getting bald. This will convince the lady that you have not only an inquiring mind, but that you also possess the natural instinct of a well-bred gentleman. I started laughing because this whole description sounded like a date that my friend has been on, because like he did this word by word, except for the handkerchief part. Rule D28. As vanity is considered one of the female virtues, you cannot do a better thing than to evince as much of it as possible. A convenient way to do this is never to forget yourself in the presence of a lady. Talk, therefore, only of your own affairs. Rule the 29th. There is no way in which you can be more serviceable and render yourself more agreeable to a lady than to bring her all the bad news you hear, especially if it relates to herself. I kind of want to hear the gossip though, like, do tell me. Rule the 31st. Always have some joke ready, which is intended to be a hit at women. For example, if you see a lady eating a piece of tongue, you can remark that you are surprised to see her doing that, as you thought the ladies had already tongue enough. Some such original joke as this will impress a lady greatly in your favor. So again, guys are making jokes about women, and then they're like, nobody likes me. Why do women not want to date me? And this was already the case in the 19th century. Rule the 33rd. Always talk a little doubtingly of female virtue, for that will show that you are rigidly virtuous yourself, and that you associate chiefly with those ladies who cannot fail to be of great advantage to you in giving you proper and sufficiently cautionary ideas of the character of the sex. Rule the 36th. Always complain that your lady acquaintances are too numerous and absorb too much of your time, which will convince a discerning woman that you have not a single respectable female acquaintance except herself, and that she therefore has you all to herself, including all your pretensions and lies. She sounds really salty with this, like, not gonna lie, she sounds really, really done. Rule the 37th. It is a masterly stroke of policy of some young men to be always railing at matrimony. An example I advise you by all means to copy, for it will give you an opportunity of courting every pretty woman who comes in your way without being suspected of any but the most unselfish intentions. Rule the 39th. What is called attitudinizing is a great game to play upon an intelligent and sensible woman. That is to throw your body into a series of graceful pictures or fascinating attitudes, which you must study before a mirror. Rule the 40th. If you perceive that a lady is decidedly averse to receiving you and actually flies from your presence, you should perpetually throw yourself under her nose on the same principle that a horse is made to smell a wheelbarrow to keep him from taking fright at so ugly a machine. Again, I cannot imagine the amount of times that Victorian women were clearly not interested and the men were still on it and they would not leave them alone. Rule the 41st. Or if a lady begins to show evident signs of wariness at your frequent calls, by all means double your attentions, call oftener or stay longer until you make yourself a fixture in her presence, like a dummy in the doorway of a haberdasher. Rule the 45th. I advise you to study to perform a few pleasing and charming tricks in every lady's presence. You can open the door on a winter's night and then astonish and delight her by asking if there are any pickles in it. And when she asks, what do you mean? You reply, nothing, only I see it's ajar. I'm gonna die. A few such tricks as these will convince a lady that you would be as amusing in a house as a monkey and therefore would be a great prize as a husband. Okay, sense of humor though. Sense of humor, let's be honest. It's attractive. So I disagree with her here. Rule the 46th. We're almost there. We're getting to the end of it. If you intend to call on a lady in the evening, do not neglect to drink liquor several times and several kinds of it during the day, for this will give spirit to your conversation, while it will enable you to perfume her whole house with a fragrance. Ew. Rule the 47th. Giggle and laugh perpetually. Make fun even of serious things. For that will show that your heart is as light as your head, and that grief is as great a stranger to the one as sense to the other. And the last one, rule the 48th. If you have not the natural sprightliness and playfulness to enable you to take advantage of these rules, take the other tack. and be as surly as possible. That is, if you cannot be a puppy and frisk and bark, be an old dog and growl. Whew, okay, that's a lot of rules. But at the same time, I just cannot with how many of these are just literally mirrors of situations that we deal with in modern courtship, because there is a huge rift between what men think women find attractive and what women actually find attractive. And you see it on the dating apps, you see it in the way people create their dating profiles, you see it in the way people are getting asked out in the street and then not left alone. Guys are just doing everything wrong. Like, it's the modern dating culture. It's the weird rift between men and women. And to know that it existed even in a society as strict as the Victorian society, a society that was built on rules, that was meant to be a massive social cage of how you had to behave and how you had to approach the opposite sex. It's just hilarious to me. It's also a little bit sad, but it's hilarious because how many times in this podcast am I going to say that nothing has changed? I will give it, though, to the fictional man in this book. The puns were on point, so kudos to Lola Montez for coming up with them, because these are actually hilarious. Let me know what you guys think. Don't forget to check out my Patreon at patreon.com/text3, and I'll hear you in another episode. See you next time. Bye-bye.